Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I bring you a message today from the people of Ireland.
The Irish desire peace with England and with the rest of the world.
It is a question of a republic.
And we want the creation of a new Ireland.
I wish to talk to you this evening about the state of the nation's affairs.
I wish to talk to you this evening about...
Welcome to the History of Ireland. Historian John Regan argued that Liam Lynch's order to assassinate politicians was, quote, the first and last military initiative that the anti-treatyites formulated which had any real chance of advancing the war in their favour. A policy of assassination such as Lynch proposed could undermine the regime, not by defeating the army, but by circumventing it. But after the death of Seán Hales, there were no real follow-up assassinations of Free State politicians, which Gerard Shannon, a historian who's written a fantastic biography of Lynch, argues that this showed Lynch had reservations about his own orders, and that the rank and file were slowly facing, quote, an erosion of trust in Lynch's vision for the conduct of the fighting. Many, many people on the anti-treaty side wanted to surrender, or at least engage in some kind of truce by the beginning of 1923. But Liam Lynch was determined to carry on the fight. And though in private, as we've seen, Lynch had reservations, it's said he had a habit of putting on a good face for his subordinates, pushing on the anti-treaty movement by sheer force of will. Many believe that he was the only thing keeping the anti-treaty forces together and still fighting. And by March 1923, Lynch didn't have long for this world. Lynch knew that he couldn't beat the Free State, but he did believe he could push the Republican movement forward. On December 28th, he wrote the following to the sidelined De Valera. We cannot hope to completely overthrow the enemy unless the unforeseen happens. What I hope for, and am definite will secure, is to bring the enemy to the position of bankruptcy. He will then realize his general position and have to stand with us in upholding our independence. He is certainly in a better position now than heretofore in putting our national ideals up to the common enemy. The idea being, I think, that the Free State will be forced to join back with the anti-treaty forces and demand full independence from Britain. I'm not quite sure I follow the logic, however, and by the threat of assassinations, by 1923 there was no way for this to occur, and that was becoming increasingly obvious. In early January, Lynch complained that regional leaders of the anti-treaty IRA were not sending him enough information, resulting in, quote, the ridiculous position of not knowing how we stand in this area. He then continued, in these circumstances, it is impossible for the GHQ to direct the situation effectively, deal with areas which are not making effective use of the resources at our disposal, or strengthen the weak areas. But then on the flip side, the rank and file were not happy with anti-treaty leadership. One man, the IRA's director of chemicals, wrote in late January about, quote, the almost complete out-of-touchness with affairs of the IRA leadership. We've discussed this before, but this fragmentation is one of the dangerous side effects of having a guerrilla army. Yes, you get a decentralized force that can strike anywhere, but that decentralization is a double-edged sword, making it very hard to control things. Local leaders would carry out their own attacks, not sending information to leadership. And, in the case of Tom Barry, some were even trying to engage in peace talks. Barry spent much of January discussing peace talks with his men and brought the proposal to Lynch. Lynch firmly turned it down. As Shannon describes, Lynch was furious with Barry and in a fit of particular high emotion, admitted privately that he felt like having Barry killed. A sure sign that the stature of the one-time leader of the West Cork Flying Column had greatly diminished in Lynch's eyes. Then soon after, as we discussed in the last episode, Liam Deasy was captured and called for the anti-treaty IRA to surrender. Can you imagine what it would have been like for Lynch? Your top commanders dropping like flies around you, giving up on your ideals as you struggle to hold the whole movement together. Lynch's response to Deasy had been, "I am to inform you officially that the proposal contained cannot be considered." Lynch was forced to go on a bit of a PR mission, quelling fears that Deasy was right, and even had to contact the American wing of the anti-treaty IRA. He knew that Deasy's capture and call for surrender would put a huge dent in morale, and wrote to one leader saying, "Deasy's documents and subsequent efforts have had an effect on morale of our forces, mainly in the South. But when our position all over the country is explained to officers, everything will go ahead as usual. I am satisfied the South will stand firm and act with the rest of the country. My view on the position has not changed since my previous communications to you." Then in a public letter to the anti-treaty forces, he wrote, "The army has withstood all efforts to break it by force in the field. It is today in a much stronger military position than at any period in its history." Now, that there is an example of Lynch's public optimism and refusal to admit that the IRA were struggling. As the chaos we discussed last episode unfolded in Kerry over March 1923, the IRA executive, i.e. the top dogs and leaders of the anti-treaty IRA, were meeting in Waterford. The first meeting occurred on March 23rd and had been delayed about 3 weeks. Arguably delayed because Lynch knew that the executive wanted to surrender. As he had explained to a friend, he would not be coerced into a surrender position. Interestingly, there was also a debate about whether De Valera should be allowed to attend this meeting. Just kind of crazy considering he was meant to be the president of the Republican government. In the end, it was agreed he could come along, but not get a vote. It's a great example of how very sidelined Dev was at this point in the conflict. He really had no control. Jared Shannon writes about this meeting that was held on the 23rd, saying, "It was in a grim atmosphere that the much delayed executive meeting took place, with severe differences of opinion among the IRA leadership. Further complicating matters were the National Army raiding parties in the area, which resulted in the meeting having to be moved to a different secret location around the Nyre Valley. Frank Aiken, the Deputy Chief of Staff, proposed that the anti-treaty forces, quote, be empowered to enter upon negotiations with the Free State. There was a vote, and it resulted in a tie, with Lynch abstaining. 3 days later, a second meeting was held. This time, it was Tom Barry who put forward a proposal that said, in the opinion of the executive, further armed resistance and operations against the Free State government will not further the cause of independence of the country. The result was 5 votes in favour and 6 against, with Liam Lynch voting no. Those who had voted alongside Lynch did so because he assured them that the IRA would secure a large supply of ground artillery in the next few weeks. Lynch believed that if he could get these weapons, it would, quote, make it easy to make terms with the enemy. Those who voted alongside Lynch, quote, stated they did so because they wished to see whether the artillery would come or not. Lynch assured them the guns would come within the next 3 weeks, and so another meeting was organised in Cork for April 10th. But that meeting never happened. Lynch and the other leaders were hiding around the Knockmealdown Mountains on the border of Waterford and Tipperary, about 20 kilometres from Araglen. But the Free State Army knew the meeting was happening, and the anti-treaty IRA were in the area. As one Free State general put it, it was the result of good intelligence work in Dublin. A small piece of information picked up in a raid in Dublin, pieced together scraps of information that something was important was happening in the south, GHQ ordered a large operation that resulted in the capture of the irregular leaders and the ultimate collapse of irregular opposition. This meant the area was crawling with Free State troops, and they swept the countryside of Tipperary, Waterford and northeast Cork in search of the anti-treaty IRA leaders. At around 4 a.m. on April 10th, the alarm was raised. Frank Aiken described it like this. It was a much bigger roundup than we expected. There must have been at least 6,000 staters on the warpath that day. The anti-treaty leaders fled through the Knockmildown Mountains. Frank Aiken, Sean Hyde, Tom Barry, Liam Lynch and a few others. Hyde described the escape vividly. Several times when each of us came close to being hit, earth and bushes splashed around it. There was one occasion when a blast of gunfire rained rocks and soil along an area between us and the boys in front. The men were armed with little more than revolvers, while their pursuers had long-range rifles. This running gunfight lasted about 20 minutes as the men tried to escape. At one point, they came across a particularly difficult piece of terrain. Remember, it was dark, probably cold, and the Knockmildown Mountains would have been overgrown and treacherous to traverse. That's why they were hiding there in the first place. As the men made their way through this particularly difficult spot, Sean Hyde reached down to help Lynch through. There was a pause in the gunfire and a single crack shot out. Lynch was hit. He knew the others wouldn't be able to carry him through the mountains and begged them to leave him. And so they said an act of contrition and escaped across the mountain. Aiken would later write that it was the hardest thing that any of us ever had to do. None of us could understand why out of six of us, he was hit or why we were not all killed. It was just God's will. We have a great description of what happens next, written by a Free State lieutenant by the name of Lawrence Clancy. I'll read you out pretty much the whole thing, because it's amazing. Fire was again opened upon us from the other side of the hill. We were compelled to take cover at the enemy's side of the rocks. For a moment I thought we were surrounded, but suddenly I heard a voice ring up on the hill in the direction where Captain Taylor and the remainder were. "Stop firing, stop firing. Those are Clancy and his party." It was our own men who opened fire at us. So when the fire ceased, I said, "Come on, lads, follow me." And we all ran as fast as we could up the hill. When we got near to where the man was lying, one soldier was some 20 yards in front of me. So I said, "Keep that fellow covered with your rifle as you approach him. And keep spreading, lads. Don't bunch in together." As the soldiers approached the man, who was lying on his back with a top coat folded into a bundle for a pillow under his head, I had a revolver in one hand and the rifle in the other. I approached at a run when the soldier who was standing there covering him with his rifle said, "We have Dev, we have Dev, sir." The glasses which he wore made the soldier think we had De Valera. But I knew Mr. De Valera by sight and said, "No, it's not Dev. Who are you?" The man answered, "You didn't get Dev. It's Liam Lynch this time. Get me a priest and a doctor. I'm dying." He was a big, sallow-complexioned man, rather pale-faced, wearing glasses. As he spoke, I dropped on one knee beside him and said, "Are you the bloody chief of staff of the Irregulars?" He answered, "I am General Liam Lynch, chief of staff of the Irish Republican Army. Get me a priest and a doctor. I'm dying." I said, "Where are your guns?" and proceeded to search him. He answered, "My friends have taken my guns." He then gave a moan of pain. I searched his pockets to quickly make sure he had no guns and said, "Where are you hit?" And he said, touching the lower part of his stomach with his hand, "Oh there, oh there." Clancy continues, explaining how they brought Lynch off the mountain. "We had at this time procured a pony and trap from a small farmer at the foot of the mountain to convey Lynch to Newcastle. Well, having reached the latter place, I phoned Clonmel informing the military authorities of our capture and requested an escort ambulance and doctor as soon as possible. Having obtained a glass of brandy for poor Lynch and a mattress and blankets from the local publican, we placed him in a comparative comfort after his ordeal of the morning and the day. I felt happy myself. As I sat in the adjoining room, the soldier who was minding Lynch looked in and said, 'The prisoner wants you, sir.' I went into him and he said to me, 'It is getting dark.' I replied, 'It's not 3 o'clock yet. Are you comfortable? You're only here an hour or so yet.' Lynch replied, 'I thought it was getting dark. I must be dying. I want to ask you to do a couple of little things for me. When I die, to tell my people I want to be buried with Fitzgerald of Fermoy. You think of that?' I assured him I would, and asked, was it the hunger striker who had died? Now, here, I'll interrupt here to explain that Lynch was talking about Michael Fitzgerald, who'd been the first man to die of hunger strike in Cork jail in 1920. Anyway, back to Clancy's retelling. Yes, Lynch replied, the greatest friend I ever had on this earth. Are you one of the old crowd? Lynch asked. I replied that I was, and said I had two brothers killed during the Tan War, with smoking guns in their hands, and I was tried by Field General Court-Martial at Victoria Barracks for murdering His Majesty's military forces and police. Lynch raised his hand and said, shake hands. I'm glad one of the old crowd got me. And with that, the tears began to stream down his face. When my hand clasped in his, I too sobbed. God bless you, I will pray for you. And you sometimes think of poor Liam Lynch and say a little prayer for me. All this is a pity. It should never have happened. I'm glad now I'm going from it all. Poor Ireland, poor Ireland. Now, to my little things. I want to tell you what to do with them. My gold watch and fountain pen to my brother. Brother Lynch, he's a Christian brother. My silver watch to my sister, Mrs. Green of Mitchelstown. My silver fountain you may keep for yourself as a small token of appreciation for the way you treated me from the time I fell into your hands. God bless you and the boys who carried me down the hill. I'm so sorry for the trouble I caused you and them. Once again, we clasped hands and parted with tears in our eyes. Lynch added, I will live until about 10 o'clock tonight. As it happened, Liam Lynch was taken to St. Joseph's Hospital in Clonmel and died at 9 p.m. that night. And with his death, really the one person holding the anti-treaty forces together was gone. And the door was open for an end to the Irish Civil War. Thanks for listening. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and if you're enjoying it, give us a review on Apple Podcasts or tell your friends. It really helps. If you want to go further, you can support the show, get ad-free listening, and bonus content on our Patreon page. Simply follow the Patreon link in the show notes or visit our website, thehistoryofireland.com. You can also get in touch through the website or on Facebook and Twitter. It's always great hearing from you guys. And if I've made a mistake, please do let me know. The History of Ireland was written and produced by me, Kevin Dolan, with music by Liam Doyle and additional help from assistant producer Aoife Murphy. This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.